Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Alexander Motel, who's a professor of political science at Rutgers University, as well as a writer and painter. He previously served as associate director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. He's a specialist on Ukraine, Russia, and the USSR, and on nationalism, revolutions, empires, and theory. He's the author of a number of books, including Dilemmas of Independence, Ukraine After Totalitarianism, and The Turn to the Right, The Ideological Origins and Development of Ukrainian Nationalism, 1919 to 1929. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alexander Motel.
Very happy to be with you again.
And the Russian foreign minister is now castigating European leaders for what they say is meddling in the Ukraine, referring to visits in December by the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State and the EU's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton. But these demonstrations that are taking place now apparently are being organized by either the regime or the Russians, and they're hiring thugs as provocateurs to do the very damage that the Russians are complaining about.
Well, but remember, yes and no. The fact of the matter is, the revolution, as it's called, has been going on for the last 2 months. And downtown Kiev has been barricaded by the democratic protesters in so-called Independence Square. And they've been there demanding initially that the association agreement with Europe be signed. And then since then, their demands have escalated. And at this point, they're essentially demanding that the government resign, that Yanukovych go, and that there be a complete overhaul of the political system. What then happened this particular weekend was that it was last Thursday, the 16th of January, the majority party in the parliament, the Party of Regions, they called together some 100 or so of their delegates. They held a rump session that lasted about 15 minutes. They were far from a quorum, and they simply pushed through several pieces of extremely repressive legislation that would essentially transform Ukraine into a kind of North Korea, almost. They were going to control the internet. They intend to control the internet. They were going to, people would get years or months of imprisonment for publicly meeting, expressing their opinions. libel would have been reintroduced, all these sorts of things that haven't been in Ukraine for a number of years. That led to protests over the weekend. And as part of the protests, a radical group within the opposition — these weren't provocateurs. It's been claimed that they're provocateurs, but they haven't been, actually. A radical group within the opposition decided to fight fire with fire. And they took to firebombing some of the riot police vehicles, and they engaged in some physical conflicts with them. But the impetus for the violence, the immediate impetus for the violence, were these repressive laws. And then, of course, the longer-term impetus for the violence was that for the last 2 months, the regime has been beating up, pillaging, burning the vehicles of democratic protesters throughout the country, virtually on a daily basis. A number of individuals have been disappeared. Several individuals were found dead. Many have disappeared, and their whereabouts are still unknown. So essentially what the regime did was create a situation of a kind of spiraling radicalization. And the ultimate, as it were, the thing that pushed everything over the edge, so to speak, was this series of legislation. And significantly, one of the elements of the legislation was that it forbade the wearing of masks and helmets in protest actions. And of course, the only reason people would wear helmets during protest actions was precisely because they feared getting beaten over the head by the riot police. And importantly, during this during the mass demonstrations this weekend, people wore masks and helmets. Everybody. The whole point was that no one is listening to the legislation. People are rejecting it, and people are simply declaring that they've had enough of the regime. And then, of course, within this context, you did have these hotheads who went out and engaged in this kind of violent activity. Now, the regime, of course, has taken advantage of that, and now they're saying, they're all terrorists, they're all individuals who are simply out to overthrow the regime. And since the regime controls the public television stations, what they're doing is showing footage of burning vehicles and failing to show footage of the hundreds of peaceful democratic activists who've been hurt by concussion grenades, those stun grenades, by rubber bullets. A number of individuals have lost their lives. What the militia, what the riot police are doing as well is they're taking stun grenades and they're tying them to rocks, and then they're throwing them into the crowds. And the result of that is that the grenade is then exploding the rock and then sending out the rock as a form of shrapnel. I'm not sure if that's a war crime. That's certainly an inhumane act. And it seems to violate all sorts of ethical considerations. But in any case, none of that, of course, is being shown on television. The burning vehicles are being shown on television. Personally, I don't think that's going to affect anybody's opinions, because the people who believe that the regime are right, which is roughly 30% of the population, will believe that the regime are right even if Christ were to come down from heaven and declare that the regime is wrong. And the two-thirds of the population that detests the regime believes that the regime is wrong, regardless of what the regime says or does. So it's just a war of images and a war of words. The reality on the ground, however, is that the situation has markedly radicalized. And what began initially as a call simply for a move towards the European Union is now essentially become a vast, vast social movement that encompasses geographically about two-thirds to three-quarters of Ukraine and encompasses millions of people who are absolutely determined to overthrow the current government and replace it with a democratic system.
But the peaceful protesters have blamed a lot of this violence on a little-known far-right group called Right Sector. And the former boxing champion, Vitali Klitschko, he and others have charged that the government is paying thugs, nicknamed Tatushki, to delegitimize these protests. And the BBC, by the way, have spoken to several of these Tatushki who the opposition have detained, and they have said that they were told to show up at a certain place and they were given weapons like hammers. And another one said he was doing it for the money after seeing an offer online, and that he had been instructed to stir up trouble. So it does seem that the regime is wanting to get these pictures, and the Russian television apparently keeps playing them over and over again.
Oh, sure. I mean, well, listen, just starting with your final point, I mean, the Russian TV has been misrepresenting so egregiously the developments in Kyiv as to be, I mean, it's just scandalous. I mean, they've been presenting every single action that's been taking place in Kyiv over the last 2 months has been presented as some kind of fascist aggression, which is absolutely absurd. But in terms of the Tatushki, now, you're absolutely right. These are individuals, you know, guys roughly somewhere in their late teens, early 20s. They often have this kind of sporty quality to them. That is to say, they look like guys who work out a lot at gyms or hang out at sports clubs. You know, short hair, that kind of thing. And they've been driven into Kyiv from all over the country. They're given some money, and they're told to stir up trouble. They've been hanging out near or around Independence Square since the very beginning of these demonstrations at the end of November. What they've usually done is assail people, democratic activists and others, somewhere in the outskirts of the of Independence Square. Occasionally, they try to assault the actual square, but these guys are fundamentally, I mean, they're not committed to anything. So when some of the Democrats say boo, they just run away. But they're there to cause trouble. And what they were doing this particular weekend, I mean, they were mobilized, and they started patrolling the streets of Kiev at night. Now, this is relatively new, as far as I recall. So they came en masse. This was on Sunday and yesterday as well, I believe. They came out en masse in downtown Kiev, and they were just patrolling the streets, looking for activists and beating them up, burning their cars, all those sorts of things. And that provoked, that led then to the Democratic activists to try to round up these guys and get rid of them. And there's now talk within the Democratic camp of actually setting up certain kinds of formalized self-defense units that would patrol Kiev and try to keep these tatushkis out of the areas of the Democratic protesters. Now, it's perfectly possible that some of these guys were involved in these activities on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised, although, frankly, I do think these were radicals. And it's perfectly possible that they were also involved in some of the other more or less violent activities that had taken place in late November. But the tatushkis' primary function is to intimidate. I mean, they're hired thugs. That's the point. That's the thing to keep in mind. They're there to intimidate. They're there to cause trouble. And, of course, they also serve a very useful function because they can beat up Democratic activists, and the government can then insist, well, look, we're not beating you up. It's the wrath of the people. The people are upset by your instability, by your activism. We're trying to reestablish law and order. So they're very convenient for the government. They can pass off a lot of the dirty work onto these kids, well, onto these thugs, if you prefer.
So, Alexander Myrtle, the president of the Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, he apparently is running a kleptocracy involving his family. His oldest son apparently basically goes to all of the Ukraine's oligarchs and the billionaires and says, I'm now your new partner. And this apparently really riles up the people. It's bad enough having, corrupt oligarchs dominating your economy, but to have these parasites in government basically fleecing them is apparently too much for the people. And we've seen this before in other cases. Tunisia, that riot, the Arab Spring began with the people's revulsion against the ruling family's tacky excess, shall we say. Is that the case in the Ukraine?
Absolutely. Yanukovych has turned into a kind of Ukrainian Ceausescu or Saddam Hussein. It's simply astounding how much money he and his sons have amassed. He himself has this lavish palace, which he essentially stole from the state outside of Kiev. Included on the grounds of the palace is this lavish, it's a clubhouse. It's the equivalent of a McMansion. He has a galleon. I'm not kidding. It's a galleon. It's a boat. It's a ship that serves as a reception area with gold-plated toilet seats. I mean, this is just absurd. His son, who was a dentist, his older son, the dentist, has become one of Ukraine's richest men in 3 years. One of his leading cronies, a guy by the name of Kurchenko, had zero capital assets 3 years ago and now has $3 billion worth in assets. And this entire cabal, they're referred to as the Yanukovych family. It's the family proper plus a bunch of their closest cronies, are worth billions of dollars. The Swedish-American economist Anders Aslund estimates that they've skimmed off roughly $10 to $15 billion of money from the Ukrainian GDP in the last 3 years. That's astounding. That's simply astounding. This is money that could have gone to hospitals, schools, roads, and things like that. And of course, one way in which they've done this is simply by shakedowns. It's that simple. It's a mafia regime. The deal is, if you want to establish an enterprise, buy something, do something, the family gets 15%. That's the word on the street, 15%. If you don't agree to the 15%, you're out of business. It's as simple as that. And alternatively, if they come in and you do have a business and they offer you a price that you can't refuse, and any price that they offer you can't refuse, you're out of business as well. This is the remarkable thing about this regime. It is a gangster regime. And, of course, for the majority of that, for the Ukrainian population, this is unacceptable. It's not just that the oligarchs control 80 to 85% of the GDP, but the president, who is supposedly the individual who's supposed to defend the security and prosperity of the population, is actually out-oligarching the oligarchs. This is pure, you know, this is rapine and repression, pure and simple. So not surprising that millions have been protesting over the last 2 months. And it's very likely, I'd say it's quite certain, that the protests will continue for the foreseeable future. People are fed up. People are simply fed up. And more important, they're no longer afraid. And when you're fed up and you're no longer afraid, you're not going to go home all that easily.
Well, just in closing, I suppose it's no surprise that Putin supports the regime. Obviously, Russia has geopolitical interests and they're in a paranoia about NATO and the EU expanding eastward bothers them. But it does, I mean, Putin essentially regulates the oligarchs and apparently he shakes them down. Supposedly, he'll retire as the richest person on the planet. But I guess Putin is not quite as brazen as Yanukovych.
He doesn't seem to, although I mean, I've seen estimates that he has $40 billion stashed away, which is pretty good for some, you know, 14 years of work. But he seems to have more class. He seems to understand that if you're going to steal, you should stash it away and not show it off. And by the same token, by virtue of the fact that he's got access to all this oil and gas money, he can actually spread some of the filthy lucre around and provide citizens with some degrees of improvements and infrastructure and things like that. Yanukovych just doesn't care. He's kind of the Robert Mugabe of Ukraine. He just takes all the money, and if the people are getting poorer in the process, who cares?
Well, Alexander Model, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Alexander Model, who's a professor of political science at Rutgers University, as well as a writer and painter. He previously served as associate director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. He's a specialist on the Ukraine, Russia, and the USSR, and on nationalism, revolutions, empires, and theory. And he's the author of a number of books, including Dilemmas of Independence, Ukraine After Totalitarianism, and The Turn to the Right, The Ideological Origins and Development of Ukrainian Nationalism, 1919 to 1929. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into charges by the heads of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees suggesting Edward Snowden has been working for the Russians all along.